And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Monday, last day of June. July's right around the corner. Soon after that, snow will be in the well, no, let's not push that. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel, who is on the road again. Bridget, where are you at today?
Western North Dakota. I am with a group that is touring some energy sites here, as well as agriculturally related sites. And so looking forward to seeing quite a number of things and just hearing the positives about North Dakota as we relay those to folks who are not necessarily from right here in town. It is a beautiful day near Medora. It's warm. It's already nearing 90 degrees out here. So I'd prefer that we get through this day, maybe put a cloud in the sky for me. A little shade can't hurt when I'm standing outside.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wish I had better news for you. Now, we do have some clouds in the eastern third of the state here, generally the valley eastward. And there's a little bit of shower activity and thundershower activity stretching from about, let's say Thief River down through DL, and then a little bit over towards Fergus going down the 94 corridor. Some of those are packing a little punch, but nothing severe. Now, for the rest of the day, we're looking at partly cloudy skies. And again, we can't rule out an isolated shower, thunder shower, but most of those staying east of the valley with highs today in the upper 70s. But again, where you're at, Bridget, yeah, temps a lot hotter the further west you go. Now, tonight, pleasantly cool weather with lows in the upper 50s. And then tomorrow, the pick day of the week, mainly sunny, northwest winds 10 to 15 and mid 80s tomorrow. Then the heat and humidity really tick up, upper 80s both Wednesday and Thursday. And it looks like as we head into the 4th of July, hot and humid, highs around 90, and a pretty decent chance for storms coming in as we head into Friday later in the day, into Friday evening. And some of those storms, unfortunately, could be on the strong to severe side. And this weather is brought to you by Progressive Ag Risk Management Specialists.
So, and they do a fabulous job. They are one of our sponsors for Here We Grow. Our wheat field actually saw a little bit of hail over the weekend. I have not yet had a chance to visit with our farmer cooperator, Jim and Michael Euland. I hope to get that done here in the next day or two. Our signs got pushed around in the wind. We've had a little hail damage. Sounds like a regular day of farming in North Dakota, and we'll find out what that wheat looks like. But thank you to folks like Progressive Ag who have been a part of this project. Also, ND Estate Services, Mark Wagner, he's going to make sure that he helps you make a complicated process much, much smoother. With one of the most recent concerns with the U.S. Senate being the age of farmers, average age in the United States is 58, he wants to make sure that we are getting farmers lined up as younger ones coming in, making sure that the dollars and cents work so that those folks can get a foothold into the industry without too many hurdles. And one way that we can do it locally is by working with a guy like Mark Wagner with ND Estate Services to get smooth transitions on our farm. And then also Thor Building. That post-frame construction probably showed itself pretty well in our storms we've had most recently. Those buildings have stood up to the test of derechos, essentially a hurricane that parked over the top of us. And thanks to the folks at Thor Building, if you have a project, especially now after something's been demolished, feel free to give them a shout. I think they'd be happy to help you out.
Yeah, it's been a rough couple of weeks, that's for sure. And it seems last two weekends, it's fallen on a Friday night. And lo and behold, what do we have this Friday for the 4th? It looks like we could see a repeat in terms of some stronger storms in the area. So, yeah. It's summertime.
I literally had a crop consultant say, it is challenging to farm in North Dakota because it's not even July yet, and we're already two winters, two springs, a half a summer, and two falls into our season.
That's true, too, right?
Not wrong. And for folks who have questions, especially as we go on today, whether it's with weather or anything ag-related, and as our guest joins us, you can reach us on the JLA insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. I hope folks are watching on Facebook and YouTube under Weather and Ag in Focus, WDAY, and Acres TV. We are approaching the day where Dean and I go to South Dakota to be a part of the Ag PhD Field Day. That'll be July 31st in Baltic, South Dakota. So lots of announcements, lots of exciting things. We just always want everyone to participate and maybe they can do that by qualifying for a $10,000 great grocery giveaway. We're going to do one of those this hour, Dean. Are you ready to run that, or are you going to make them?
I am. You know what? Let's do it. We're going to wait until our last segment. So right after 1:45, be listening, and we're going to announce the name of our qualifier then.
Yes, that's a qualifier, not the winner, the qualifier. This whole project is being sponsored to us by Allsager Meats, Kingpins, and again, ND Estate Services. We're really excited to be doing this because who couldn't use $10,000 worth of groceries? Mine might be ice cream and sugar cookies, but hey, to each their own.
Right? We're not judging what you want to get. That's okay.
Yeah. There is no way I can keep the shape of a brownie if I try to pare that down to carrots and spinach all the time.
That'd be boring, wouldn't it? No doubt.
I'm working my way into it.
Oh,
absolutely.
Man. Well, and we are about to go into, I had an emailer shoot me an email this morning. He's one of our farmers, and he subscribes to the LRC, and he said, hey, Dean, he goes, let me know if I'm wrong, but we should be getting out of the wet cycle right now and getting into the dry part of the LRC cycle, and he's 100% correct. And his question was, well, what about with this stormy activity this Friday into Friday night? It was that part of the LRC cycle. And I said, actually, this one snuck through, you know, and like we said, hey, the LRC isn't perfect, but it gives you a darn good idea of when the wet periods, dry periods and whatnot. And I told him, I said, you know, just hang tight after this Friday. And it doesn't mean we don't get any rain. It's just that we're drier than normal is what we can expect. And after this weekend, I do think we're going to go into a drier than normal pattern for a week to 10 days, if not maybe a little bit longer. And again, that doesn't mean we don't see any rain, but it on overall, the whole grand scheme of things will be drier than normal. And then, as we said, towards the end of the month and into early August, that's when we get back into the wet part of the LRC cycle. In fact, that early August time period could be a wet one. So just keep that in the back of your mind as well.
Well, honestly, when you say drier than normal, I would like someone to talk to me about normal anymore, because I know you only go back 30 years and I completely argue, or is it only 20? Because I argue that if you're not including the wet cycle of the 90s and the drought of the 80s, you don't have an accurate picture. So normal, kind of in the eye of the beholder, don't we think?
Yeah, there's not much that's normal around here. I'll just be the first to say that. Whether it's weather.
I thought you said that was the studio. No, we're talking about the weather.
Well, weather and basically everything. I think Addison will back that up, right, Addison?
I would, yeah.
Yeah, I figured you would. Yeah. Well, yeah, we have a returning guest coming on this afternoon, and great timing, too, considering all the storminess we've been having, and how does that affect cybersecurity?
So Chris Sherman with Tech Support Farm is our cybersecurity superhero, and I do mean hero, because when he gets the call from clients who have a concern about, holy cow, I think I've been hacked, or what does this mean, and how can I recover it, or I've had a change in employees, and I need to make sure that nothing bad happened, Chris is right there to help them with that and so much more. But aside from that, he comes in to share information and advice with those of us who need to know more on a regular basis. Like you said, Dean, with the storms we've been having, we are really ripe for scams and phishing schemes and spoofing. Also, the attack on Iran recently, the Iranian government has responded and said, we want to unleash our own cyber attacks on the U.S. And we know that agriculture is a primary target of those. So there's a lot of concern that we should be thinking about. It's bigger than just the Nigerian prince who's still promising me $3 million if I just return his email. So,
well, answer his email, for crying out loud.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear Nigeria is hotter than Dickinson, North Dakota. I'm not prepared for this.
Well, we'll have more after the break here with Chris Sherman. And again, if you have any questions for us, 701-293-9000, or you can email us weather@flagfamily or ag@flagfamily. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
So very glad you are joining us today, because in the wake of everything that has been happening in the area and internationally, it's great to have our cybersecurity superhero That is Chris Sherman. He is with Tech Support Farm. And okay, Chris, let's just start out with this. When the storm passed, when the derecho was over, which literally I'm just calling a hurricane, I can't believe we haven't named it yet. Like, can it be, you know, Hurricane Adele or, you know, derecho Dean or something? But my biggest concern, how many calls did you start getting in those hours or the next morning with folks who were very concerned about damage to their security systems, their internet, all those types of things?
Okay, so there were two things that kind of struck me by that question. First off, I like the name Dean. That works for
Horatio Dean, right? Dean.
Okay, so the number one thing that I think about is, like, you know, we know that, you know, right after an incident like that, you know, crisis creates confusion. And what really struck me is everybody has me saved in their phone as, you know, the guy from a different company. And so I was getting calls all Saturday and all Sunday from customers about damaged equipment, whether it was irrigation or grain sites and stuff like that. And they just simply forgot that I don't work there anymore and I don't do that. So, from an internet and security standpoint, we had numerous sites that went down. And we did spend, you know, a significant amount of time getting those kind of back up and online. But that was a major problem because, you know, a lot of these areas were out of power. And so because they're out of power, now they're out of internet. Now they've lost a significant amount of communication. So, from that standpoint, that was a big deal. People didn't really think about the cybersecurity side of things, and that to me is really important. And we need to kind of have a conversation about that.
So Chris, all right, I'm out, and you know, I just lost power out on the farm. You know, I'm all stressed out. Equipment broke down, whatever. I lost power due to the storm. If you're not getting internet access, or are you? You know, what's the biggest threat from these cyber bullies, if you will? I mean, if we don't have any power.
I think that, you know, it's not necessarily the event itself. I think it's after the event. I think it's once power comes back online, and then we start, you know, dealing with the insurance process and the adjusters and the banks and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. That's when we really need to be very mindful of what's going on. Simply because there's so much information that's flowing back and forth from your adjusters and from your insurance companies, the amount of money that's going into your bank accounts, that kind of thing. You need to be really, really mindful of the scammers and who's actually emailing you and who you're actually talking to. That is a major issue.
So basically, if you don't recognize the person, the email, just delete it.
Oh, I would go so much further, and I would say that even if you do recognize the email, I would call and verify and have a conversation. Because I think we've kind of talked about, you know, if you are not using a commercial email address, that, you know, has a, you know, a .com, and you're using like a Gmail or a Yahoo or AOL or whatever like that, those emails can be intercepted. And so they might see, you know, they read the emails that you're sending out, and then they might jump in and try to spoof you that way as well. Absolutely.
Bam.
Yeah. So even if you are expecting that email, double check it. And double check who it's from before you go sending anything, before you go clicking on links. Always double check. That is absolutely paramount. Mm.
But they make it look so genuine. They're stealing logos, right? And
oh, yes.
Unless my bank is starting to use, you know, Jellybean371 as their email address,
yeah.
Which I
yeah.
don't think so, you've got to actually open. You've got to hover over those links. You have to look so closely.
It becomes even so much more complicated than that. It becomes a social engineering issue where they might intercept the emails and they read the details and that sort of thing. They will follow up with a phone call to you asking for personal information. And so it's not even a situation of just the emails. It's a situation of emails, phone calls, text messages, any sort of communication surrounding these types of things. It is far too easy to get in touch with people, and they can, you know, they can manipulate you very easily that way.
Okay. So, all right. What are those? I get it. We've got to look for the email. We got to make sure the logos are right, because sometimes they swipe, the spoofers, the scammers, they'll swipe an old email address,
yep.
or excuse me, an old logo. And if you're very cognizant of that, that's a good tip off. You said just delete those things, get rid of them. Should you ever forward them to others in your organization and say, be on the lookout for this?
you should forward them to. Okay, so I would say that if you have a question about an email, always, you know, forward it to us at, you know, at fraud@techsupport.farm. We can tell you if it's fraudulent or not. The other thing that I would say is that, you know, when you're looking at an email and you are expecting it, go back through and just read through the email and make sure that it follows the full chain of emails, you know, the replies and you know, the emails that came in. Because if a spammer or a spoofer has come in and intercepted the email, there's a likelihood that, you know, it will just be a single email, even if you do expect it. Does that kind of make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you don't see that email history, and yet it's a topic that you guys have been talking about, and it's even got the same subject line, red flag, yeah. Major red flag. If you see that absolutely. Your logos look a little pixelated and they look a little blurry because they grabbed a cheap image, red flag, huge red flag.
So, Chris, I mean, outside of deleting these emails, is there anything else we should be doing, reporting the email address to somebody in particular, or...
So if you report the email address to, again, fraud@techsupport.farm, right. We will file an IC3, which is with the FBI, and it reports it as a fraudulent email, and they'll handle it. Again, we can also, you know, report it to the email provider, whether it's, you know, Google or Yahoo or whatever. But we can kind of take care of that for you simply because it is a little bit more of a lengthy process, and there, you know, there's details inside the email that have to be pulled out. So.
Hmm.
Also, we have to keep in mind it's not just maybe the banks or the insurance company. It could be government agencies, NRCS.
Yes, yes.
It could, because we know the IRS has been spoofed a bunch.
Yes.
One of the things we had in our show notes was talking about equipment dealers. And frankly, there is a huge uncovering, if you will, of a most recent scam where this got a lot personal. It was a local salesman. This is not North Dakota, please, by the way. But the farmer involved, his local salesman was taking out fraudulent loans. And he didn't know about that. But there were red flags, such as emails being sent that seemed kind of unusual, and there was no follow-up to them.
Yep.
So that's probably a situation as well. If it doesn't look right, you better check. Right? No matter what.
Absolutely. The other thing that I think, you know, and this kind of sidesteps the whole cybersecurity thing, but I mean, we know that work and labor shortages are abound right now, right? And if if you're trying to get your site back up and online and everything, be really, really mindful of those contractors that, you know, come out of some other state and say they can be up here and they can jack your bin or they can put your irrigators back up or they can fix your barn or whatever the case may be. Because if they're looking for money down and they, you know, I mean, do your due diligence, right? Go through, make sure that they're fully insured, make sure that they have, you know, their valid contractors, they have their licenses and that sort of thing, because those people come up out of, you know, they crawl out of the woodwork, and that's, yeah, that's a great way to lose your insurance, you know, check.
It's kind of like when you have natural disasters, hail, tornadoes, yes. And then you get all these out-of-town people that are not reputable.
Absolutely.
Hey, we can do this at a cheaper price. You just have to be vigilant, really.
Yes. And the problem, too, you know, I mean, from that aspect is the fact that just, you know, the way that those sites get, you know, put together and built, we're pulling, you know, most of the time, you know, your dealer is pulling subcontractors from, you know, out of state anyway. Just because of pricing and the way it goes. So,
sure.
You know, it's not uncommon to have people from Kansas coming up and building, you know, jacking bins and you know, setting up irrigators and any kind of equipment out there. So,
okay. I'm hoping that folks want to ask questions. I mean, first of all, Chris is incredibly thorough as our cybersecurity superhero. He makes sure that we are all on our toes and thinking about these things daily. But if you think something suspicious could be going on, if you have a question outside of our initial discussion today, please call us on the JLA insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. Stay tuned for news. And when we return, more cybersecurity ideas, suggestions, and watch up. Well, I hope you're all enjoying our discussion with Chris Sherman of Tech Support Farm, our cybersecurity superhero. He doesn't wear a cape, but he comes with a ladder, great VPNs, and better password protection than anybody we know. So, Chris, this is probably a little bit directed at both you and I. And this is an emailer question saying, with recent news of Mexican cartels hackers to track and identify border agents, What are your thoughts and concerns about cartels or other countries hiring hackers to target ag and the food supply? Well, I have my answer, but what's yours?
I agree. It is a major issue, especially when, you know, we're looking at, you know, commodities and how they're, you know, affected internationally, especially with geopolitical issues. You know, we've talked about Iran and stepping up their attacks. Ag is, I've said it until everybody's blue in the face, but ag is the, you know, one of the number 10 industries in the U.S. being targeted right now. So I think that's a definite concern, and I think that people need to be, you know, particularly vigilant about it.
And Chris, I saw something on the news, and I believe it was something that China was going to try and infiltrate our food supply by hacking. How would that be possible? By hacking and affecting our food supply chain?
I mean, it's gonna come through equipment and through, you know, basically the operation of the equipment itself. So whether it's your tractors or your, you know, your farm equipment, right, that's where it's going to be. The other thing is, you know, obviously your bank accounts and watching your, you know, transactions. And really, I think that if we're going to be looking at China as a threat, I think it's going to be a little bit higher up in the food chain, the larger companies, the larger farms, and not necessarily the smaller ones.
Okay.
When you're looking at a national, you know, sponsored hack, that's where it's going to be, you know, a little bit bigger. But if you're looking at the smaller hackers that are trying to get in for money, you know, maybe more of the, you know, the less funded ones, that is definitely where you need to be mindful.
When it comes to the quote unquote higher up in the food chain,
yeah,
is there anything our government is doing behind the scenes that could alleviate a lot of this?
You know, I think that, yes, we are doing things about it. There's actually a bill headed towards, you know, the House, and I think it's going to be in there next month, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. It's the Cybersecurity, yep, and Agriculture Act, and that one is going to allocate funds to, you know, beefing up cybersecurity within the ag industry. But again, you know, the concerns that I've always had is that, you know, it takes big numbers to get the federal government's attention, right?
Right.
If you're not, you know, 500 million or above, you know, you're probably not on their radar. And so, you know, the amount of money that they've thrown to it and they've allocated towards it is probably not enough to really make too much of a difference. So, but it's a start.
Okay.
I mean, we're at least talking about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
We are, and we're trying to raise the awareness. And I think we need to back up just a second here. When our listener asked the question, you know, will they hack into it and how, and as Chris mentioned, yes, food security is national security. We need to remember that right, yeah, off the bat. But I don't think it's just the equipment. I agree with the banking, because if someone interrupts your funds, you can't buy seed.
Correct.
You can't buy fertilizer. You can't put a crop in the ground.
Yeah.
With your equipment, they can screw with your planter to affect your tillage depth. So you're planting either too deep or too shallow.
Yep.
Your irrigators, you're not getting enough water, or you're overwatering and causing a yield reduction. But I also think the thing that we forget about the most is probably the fact that cybersecurity can come in just through the phone that you have, and they can swipe information.
Yes.
They can shut down grain trades. They can get into agribusinesses and this has happened, Coal Alliance in Ohio. They were shut down by malware, ransomware. That, think about this as a local elevator. You can't run your scale.
Yep.
You can't probe the trucks. You can't dump trucks. You can't move grain. You can't load rail cars. You can't cut checks to farmers. Even if you're using Bushel's wallet and you want to electronically transfer, you can't do it.
Yep.
And that will hamper you in the middle of harvest on a 10-day run. And I want you to think about the size and scope of what we've lost for storage capability on the farm in North Dakota in Derecho Dean, where we took out 25 million bushels at a minimum of on-farm storage. That's just within a 30-mile loop around me. I was,
exactly,
with farmers this morning out here in western North Dakota. They're pushing that number to 50 million. They may include some agribusiness storage within that, but I do not know a farmer who was not damaged in this storm. Bins, machine sheds, farm,
yep,
equipment, everything. Homes. Homes were the worst.
Yeah.
So, there you go. That's just food for thought, and I hope we're all thinking about it.
And Chris, you know,
might not be just,
go ahead, Bridget. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Go ahead. Last comment. It might not just be the farmer. It might be the employees.
Absolutely.
They know the farm employees.
Yep.
and can get in through the farm employees as well.
Yes.
Okay. I'm done.
All right. Chris, Chris, I got an email that just came in here asking if you know what percentage, obviously the percentage should be 100%, but what percentage of our ag community actually has a plan, a cybersecurity plan to alleviate phishing and all that?
Okay. I love that question. First and foremost, there's two plans that farms should have. Number one is they should have a plan for cybersecurity, right? You know, for phishing attempts, for, you know, protecting their devices, protecting their network and all of that. But then there's a flip side. That plan is the disaster, you know, recovery plan. What happens after that event? You know, and again, that plays into, you know, dare I say, Horatio Dean. You know, what is the game plan if we don't have the equipment, if we don't have the ability to operate, if we're missing, you know, components of our operation, how do we, you know, get back online and, you know, minimize the downtime? And sadly, you know, unfortunately, farms are, you know, notorious for not having either of those game plans. A specific percentage of farms that have, cybersecurity in place, I would say it's maybe a conservative 5%.
Wow.
That is, yeah.
That's it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you got to think about it. You know, just the tri-state area, yeah. You know, we have well over 100,000 farms, and that's from the bottom all the way up to the top. And I would say that, you know, given that, it's an issue that people are more willing to talk about now and are starting to see the light. But people that have actually done anything about it, I would say you're in that conservative 3 to 5%.
And do you think it's because, oh, it'll never happen to me kind of attitude?
It's partly because of the, you know, it will never happen to me, but it's also partly because nobody wants to put out the capital to protect themselves, but at the same time, they don't talk about it, right? And again,
it's embarrassing.
Yes, it is. You know, it's far easier to, you know, to have that, you know, private conversation with your doctor, so to speak. Nobody wants to go and talk about it with their friends.
Good point.
You know, we get calls all the time from people that, you know, have either been hacked or their, you know, their parents were hacked or, you know, their kids got into something. And I mean, these calls come in from your friends and neighbors, but your friends and neighbors are not going to sit down at the cafe and tell you about it.
All right.
That's a private issue that they want to take care of. And yeah, for sure.
So, when you guys talked about the size of farms too, you know, sure, it's easy to go pick off the large farm.
Yeah.
They're easy to find and know who they are. But frankly, if I'm a hacker, maybe I shouldn't be giving away ideas, but you know, why not start with the small ones who think to themselves, all right, I'm under 2,000 acres. I'm not a big deal.
Yeah.
Nobody really wants to hack me. But you do that enough times, that becomes substantial where dollars are being lost, land deals are going bad. Insurance fraud, fake equipment loans, all of it.
Yep.
That all starts to really affect the overall economy. And nobody's really calling in to say, even after USDA's report today, nobody's really calling me to say, man, I'm going to make bucket loads of money this year farming.
No.
No. That's not the case.
And let's try and get somebody qualified before we go to break here. I want to make sure that our potential qualifier here has enough time to call in, and then we'll go back to Chris here real quick. So today's qualifier is Dana Jackson of Fargo. Dana Jackson of Fargo. Dana, you have 9 minutes and 70 seconds to call, 701-293-9000, 701-293-9000. Again, today's qualifier is Dana Jackson. Good luck, Dana. You got a little over nine minutes left to call. So, Chris, if anybody wants to get a hold of you or if they're interested in getting a better cybersecurity plan, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I would definitely say give us a call at 701-446-8518 or reach out to us on our website at techsupport.farm.
And don't let this just go to the end, right? Don't wait until something bad happens to you. Chris, you've got that fence check.
Yes, I was going to say, the other thing is we do have a really nice tool on our website. It's called Fence Check. Essentially, it helps you find the holes in your cybersecurity defense. And what you do is you just go online, you answer, you know, questions about your operation, and it gives you a, you know, 24 hours later, you get a personalized report on things that you can do to protect yourself, and ways to step up your security. And then at the same time, it also, you know, kind of helps you understand what software and what tools you need to, you know, acquire to protect your operation.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, as always, Chris, thanks so much. And like I said, Bridget, we have to get him a cape made. So next time he's in the studio, he has to wear this cape.
Absolutely.
Wear the cape, but I bet that tights aren't going to happen.
Nope. Nope. There are lines to everything, isn't there?
Right. Well, Chris, thanks again for coming.
Absolutely.
In. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. And don't go anywhere. When we come back, we'll hit on a couple of ag topics. We'll have another recap of the weather. And again, today's qualifier, you have under 9 minutes left to call Dana Jackson of Fargo. If you know Dana, let her know, hey, you've got about less than 9 minutes now, 701-293-9000 to call in to be a qualifier for our great grocery giveaway. You don't want to pass up a chance to win $10,000 in groceries. Dana Jackson of Fargo, again, less than 9 minutes. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus on this Monday, last day of June. And we've got some thundershower activity on radar east of the valley, stretching generally from about Thief River through Detroit Lakes. In fact, areas just south of DL around Frazee and just south of there, some stronger cells. And then another line of scattered showers stretching from about Fergus down to Elbow Lake. And again, most of this activity this afternoon is going to stay east of the valley. I mean, we can't rule out a pop-up shower, thunder shower in and around the valley. But again, most of this is going to be into Lakes country. And tomorrow I would call the pick day of the week, low humidity, more sunshine, winds out of the northwest at about 10 to 15, and highs in the mid-80s. Then towards the end of the week, the humidity does increase. Temperatures will be in the upper 80s and to near 90 by Friday. The 4th looks humid, but we do have a chance for storms coming in Friday. It looks like later in the day, as a cold front approaches, and that will bring drier weather for the holiday weekend, but could have a problem Friday evening and Friday night with storms, and some of those could be on the strong to severe side. We'll keep an eye on it for you. Hopefully this misses us to the south. There's a chance for that, but again, I wouldn't bank on that, as it's going to be a pretty potent cool front, bringing less humid. And when that slams into the heat and humidity, something's got to give. And it looks like that would be Friday evening into Friday night. So, again, and we'll fine tune that as we head throughout the week.
Well, I got a lot of guys out there that want to cut hay and alfalfa and so forth. So, yeah, fine tune that deal. They're going to need to know more, Dean. That's what we're looking for.
How many dry days? Because we got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. All three look pretty dry. Or is that not sufficient?
Are we cutting today? Because being dry till then would be great. But if you have fields that aren't quite ready yet and you wanted to cut like Thursday, then that's where the problem's going to lie.
Gotcha.
When are we cutting, et cetera? When you say how many dry days, oh, all of them. That's what I'm looking for.
Right.
And we should be asking for everything.
Yeah, right, right. And we should start to turn drier as we head into next week. So one more time, we're going to give this name a shout-out once again. Dana Jackson of Fargo. How much time does Dana have left there, Addison, approximately?
3 minutes, 20 seconds.
That's pretty approximate.
You can do it, Dana. Come on, you can do it.
Come on. If you know Dana Jackson of Fargo, shoot her a text. Say, hey, you got like 3 minutes to call in to be a qualifier for $10,000 grocery giveaway. So
again, you just may be rewarded.
Right?
With some groceries.
If Dana doesn't want to call in, I got about three other people who would like to sub in their names. I can just send those to you guys in an email, so you can just add them instead.
That'd be nice. Mark myself down as a qualifier.
Yeah, that might look a little suspicious, Addison.
What if you mark me down as a qualifier?
Oh, that's different. No problem.
What if your name is suddenly Addison Riedel? Does that work? Is that both of us?
It could.
Split it.
You could split it then.
That's right. Okay. So something to think about. I mentioned earlier that the Senate has a proposal in front of them right now to talk about how to bring farmers into the fold, so to speak, because we have that concern right now with aging farmers and not enough young folks being able to get over the financial hurdles to get involved. We'll wait to see where that goes. It's much like the cybersecurity bill that Chris Sherman was talking about. We just have to watch how those things move through congressionally. But there is a great concern right now. Average age of farmers in the United States is 58, and we don't see a lot of turnover. But we have a lot of folks who would like to farm. So it would be great to bring them back into those communities, be a part of the economy, and certainly get their feet under them in ways that they would like. Now, secondly, I want to talk a little bit about agritourism, because that's one of the things I'm doing today with this group. I didn't say terrorism, I said tourism, so we're going to think the positive. And when you have folks coming to your farm site, they want an experience. There's something called the Harvest Host, where you can sign up for that. You can camp in the yard in exchange for maybe a little labor. Maybe it's a you pick strawberry farm and you pick berries for the owners and for yourself, because you got to stay and camp out in their yard. And they're doing that with RVs down to tents for primitive camping, the whole nine yards. But additionally, if you have folks coming out, even let's say you have school groups coming to your dairy and they want to tour it, it's important to get the release form signed, because more and more we're in a litigious society where people get nervous. They want to make sure that they're covered, whether they are attending or hosting. This is a time of year where we have a lot of branding that are going on. Neighbors, friends, family are getting together, bring their horses in, and they rope and drag calves to do branding. When you're doing that, oftentimes we're seeing more and more folks also signing liability waivers there to protect themselves. Even if I brought my own horse in and was there by my choice, if something happens, whether it's to me, to the livestock we're working with, et cetera, we do have to be prepared and cover the ground literally where problems could arise. So that's one thing that we have to think about when it comes to agritourism, especially as we have more and more happening. A lot of folks wanting to supplement their farm incomes are finding ways to host people on their farms, share the agricultural experience, and show what they do every single day. And with those things, we have problems with tangled titles. If you are a family member who has inherited a piece of land and you inherited it with your siblings or cousins, and now all of a sudden you have folks that maybe wanted to sell part of that land, or you want to build a house there, but because you can't find clear title to it, you need to do a whole lot of legal work to get on top of the situation. If you can, in some cases, you may be forced to sell because there's not a clear title to the whole property you've been living on or working with. And so these tangled titles represent over 500,000 acres in the United States. And it's equating to a dollar value of $32 billion of land that's in these tangled titles. And it might not just be farmland. It can be family homes, lake homes, et cetera. So we give a lot of cautionary tales about cybersecurity, but we also have to consider the fact that somebody like ND Estate Services with Mark Wagner, or talking to your attorney, you need to make sure these titles are clear, because if not, who's getting what and how? It's not as easy as one might think. It gets pretty messy fast, to be honest. Things you didn't consider today, did you, Dean?
Not at all. Not at all.
You need to own more property, so it could be a whole lot messier.
Right. Now, you were saying earlier, Bridget, about the average age of our farmers being what, 58, you said?
Yes.
Okay. So is it a problem where the kids don't want to inherit the farm or don't want to help with the farm? Or is that?
It can be all the above, but also the startup costs to get into farming are pretty high. I mean, you got to think about your land costs and what it would take for you to buy out that next person when the estate can be valued at multi-million dollars. You're 25 years old and you want to start buying land. How do you do that when you don't have the equity to go along with it, right? That's pretty big hurdle to overcome for people. There's a lot to expect.
Right. So actually, we have Tom on line one with a quick question for you, Bridget. Tom, go ahead.
Hey, Bridget. Yeah, real quick. So when we used to lease out hunting land in Minnesota, we'd have not only someone sign on their part, but we signed on adjoining. We each signed papers, but we also indemnified that in case they found a hole on our land that we didn't know about. It doesn't. You know, we're not gonna accept every hole that a gopher may dig. And so that's important for the person that's riding their horse on someone else's land that they sign something like that as well.
You're exactly right. It's got to be on both sides of it. It does not even just with agritourism. It could be hunting, especially if you bring people in from out of the area. Tom, that's a fabulous question and a great point. So thank you. I appreciate it when you call in, Tom. And also, be tuned next for the Jay Thomas Show. You're not going to want to miss it.